So we have Kent and Rachel O'Donnell here visiting from New Zealand with their two of their children, Michael and Phoebe. When I met them a few minutes before service, it was immediately evident that they're all wonderful people. They will be here this week, and he'll teach on Wednesday evening as well. He's about to present to us, but I wanted to let everyone know that there will be food available downstairs in the fellowship hall after service if you want to stay and visit with the O'Donnells. Kent and Rachel O'Donnell work with the church in Palmerston North, New Zealand. They have four children, Chloe, Ethan, Michael, and Phoebe. New Zealand is a small South Pacific nation east of Australia with a population of 5.34 million. Palmerston North, about 91,800. It's steadily becoming more secular and spiritually apathetic, and sometimes even antagonistic to Christian principles. As of 2024, the congregation has 62 members. Their aim is to encourage and equip the brethren to grow in faith, knowledge, and service, to nurture strong families and mature leadership, and to urge active participation in church works. Though evangelism is challenging and progress is slow, they continue providing opportunities, employing various approaches, campaigns, door knocking, letterboxing, benevolence, gospel meetings, and everyday friendship outreach. They utilize effective teaching tools to motivate obedient faith. In recent years, 11 souls have been baptized, 9 of which remain faithful. So let's hear from Kent.
I didn't realize how detailed that introduction was going to be. That's about all I was going to say anyway. But anyway, we will do our best. At least you'll be able to see some pictures soon. Hey, it's great to be here. Really thankful for the opportunity to be able to speak. It's been about 5 years since we were last here. And various things have prevented us from coming sooner, but really thankful to be able to have this opportunity to speak to you today. And you have the honor of being the first congregation to see the slide presentation. It's a little bit of a double-edged sword because you also will kind of, this is where I find out all the glitches in the presentation, so you're going to be my guinea pigs and show me where all the changes need to be made, but bear with me as we go through it for this first time. What I want to do is to imitate a little bit of what Paul and Barnabas would do. They would go from place to place, and when they'd finished working for a period of time, they would go back to their home congregations and share what God had done through them. And so when you see on that first part of the verse where it talks about Phoenicia and Samaria, they were regions. Maybe you want to think Tennessee. And when you get to the next part where it talks about the church in Jerusalem, think of the church here at Maryville. And so as they received Paul and Barnabas, you have received us, and we get to tell you some of the things that God has been able to achieve through our works in New Zealand. This is New Zealand, for those of you who are not familiar with where we are located. As Ethan touched on, we're not too far away from Australia. If you would hop on a plane from, this is the city of Auckland, and fly to Houston like we did, that's going to take you about 12 or 13 hours of straight flying, not counting all the rest of the flights to get to Cleveland, Tennessee, where we finally arrived. You'll see that New Zealand is comprised of two main islands. We have the North Island and the South Island. We didn't come up with the names. They're pretty boring, but we're stuck with them. Wellington, it's a bit dark. I'll turn around. Wellington here at the bottom of the North Island, that is the capital city. And then Palmerston North, where we live and work for the church, that is about a quarter of the way up the North Island. As was mentioned, New Zealand has a population of around about 5.34 million people. These are some of our national symbols. You see there our national flag. In the corner, you have what's called the Union Jack. That shows that we are part of the British Commonwealth. Beside that is our national coat of arms. And you'll see there that we have a European segment of the population, but you also have an indigenous segment, and these are the Māori people. And for the most part, we get on pretty well. There are still a few tensions along the way, but we try to share the land. You'll see a silver-coloured leaf in the top corner there. That is called the silver fern. That's our national logo. A lot of our sports teams will have that somewhere on their outfits. Below that is the kiwi This is a small flightless bird, but it's pretty special to us in New Zealand. And often New Zealanders are called kiwis, named after this bird. And then beside that, you've got a green plant called a koru. The name means in Māori, spiral or coil, as you can kind of see obviously by its shape. And this has special significance to the Māori tattoos, Māori carvings, and Māori art. And it has the idea of peace and continuance and strength is kind of the meaning behind this this koru design. And then you see an oval-shaped ball. This is representing the sport of rugby. Rugby is our national sport in New Zealand. It's remotely similar to your American football, but our guys don't wear those sissy pads and helmets. They just go there and tackle just as they are. But we enjoy rugby. New Zealand is a very pretty country. We have a bit of everything. We've got rivers, we've got lakes, we've got mountains, we've got beautiful forests, wonderful farmland. You're not very far away from the beach, no matter where you are in New Zealand. You'll see in the bottom corner here, these, not quite as clear as of light, but these are emerald pools, and that's the colour they actually are. That's not a reflection of the sky, and you can walk right on past them and see that. So New Zealand is a very, very beautiful country. A lot of tourists come to see the sites of New Zealand. That is supposed to say prominent structures. And so some of that's going to... Okay, I'm seeing a glitch. And anyway, you'll see the Sky Tower there in Auckland. This is this one up here in this corner. And Auckland is the most populous city in New Zealand. Has about a third of the population lives in Auckland. Those who are familiar with the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies, well, those movies were made in New Zealand. This is Hobbiton, and it shows, one of the villages of the Hobbits. Down below that is Lanark Castle. I just recently discovered that this is the only, I guess, legitimate bona fide castle in New Zealand. It's been around for a while and has been used for a variety of different purposes. Now it's just been used as a tourist site. And then on this corner here, we have our government buildings, and it's affectionately called the Beehive. And you can see from its shape, its round shape, which is really inconvenient for our politicians to get anywhere. They've got to kind of walk in circles, which I kind of find is quite ironic. If your politicians are like our politicians, not only do they walk in circles, but they talk in circles. And so I think that's kind of an appropriate shape for our parliament buildings. Anyway, we'll move right along. New Zealand is noted for its farming and produce, dairy products, lamb, meat, and wool products. We export a lot of that. Manuka honey is a honey that we produce in New Zealand. It has a great deal of natural properties and healthful properties. My older brother Todd is actually a beekeeper and produces a lot of that Manuka honey. We're also noted for being able to grow pretty much anything subtropical, and so we export a lot of apples, a lot of fruit. You'll see there the kiwi fruit that we also export to a lot of different places as well. New Zealand is also noted for its forestry. Trees can grow, or at least pine trees can grow, about four times faster than they can here in North America. And so we're able to sell a lot of our trees and timber for exports. This is what our money looks like, a bit more prettier than your green stuff. We've got a few more different designs. You'll see some famous New Zealanders on the notes there. Of course, the Queen Elizabeth II on the $20 note is going to have to change soon. Now her son Charles is king, so eventually his face is going to be on that one. But you'll also see some of our native birds, some of our native flora and fauna is also on these on this currency. That brings us to Palmerston North. This is where Rachel and I and our family live and work with the church. We have a river kind of dissects the city. It's quite a beautiful town. It's very much kind of a rural city. And we have a population of around about 92,000 within the city itself. Here is our meeting place. And so in this corner here, this is our outside of our main auditorium. Below that is inside our main auditorium where we will meet for worship, adult Bible classes and the like. And then along the bottom, you have a building that we kind of affectionately call the house. It's a house that's been converted into classrooms. My office is in there. We also have an area where we will have fellowship activities, where we will eat meals and that kind of thing. And it's nice to know every now and then, as the picture shows, that God smiles upon us every now and then and gives us that reminder that he's not going to flood the whole world. We need to remember that God keeps his promises, and that's one of those things that reminds us of that. In the top corner there, that's a logo that we came up with for our congregation. Any piece of literature that we put out in our evangelism, we try to have that logo on it. Now, what I want to do now is just to... the rest of the slide presentation is kind of going to be loosely based on what we see here in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 4 through 16. And so what we see here is the basic work of the church. And so the work of the church has a message attached to it. And so in verses 4 and 6, we have the basic message of the gospel kind of in a nutshell. All those seven ones, right? And so this is the kind of the words and the gospel message that we're trying to get out to the community and to share with the brethren. Well, there's also ministers of this message. And the word minister basically means servant. Well, who are the ministers that are responsible for getting this message out to the people? Well, we certainly see roles such as evangelists. We've got pastors or elders, and then we have teachers. So certainly they are responsible for getting the message out. But when you think of that word minister, the word servant, that's not just for these three roles. Every single Christian is a minister. Every single Christian is a servant. And so we'll see back up there in verse 7, it says, but to each one of us, grace was given. By the way, this isn't referring to saving grace, this is referring to serving grace. Every single one of us has been given serving grace for us to go out there and be about the Lord's business. And so down in the last couple of verses there, it talks about the proper working of each individual part of the body. Each individual member of the church has a role to play. And then we have the mission. What is our mission? Well, it's a work of service, and we are speaking the truth in love. We are speaking that message back up there in verses 4 through 6. We are trying to communicate that in love. That's our mission. Well, what result is that going to have? Well, there's going to be an external focus to this. That external focus is that is going to result in the growth of the body. That word growth is talking about growth in number, increasing in number. And so there's an external focus to our mission, right? We are sharing this gospel message to those who are outside the church in hopes that we will grow in number. But not only that, there is an internal focus to our message. And that is so we have the building up of the body. Those who are already in the church, you want to build up and encourage them. And so this gives you a bit of an idea of the flow and the direction of where I'm going to take this presentation. And so the external focus of our work, one of the things that we do is letterboxing. You might call it mailboxing. This is where we go from house to house and we put cards and pamphlets into people's mailboxes. We're not breaking the law. This is perfectly legal in New Zealand. We can do this anytime we like with pretty much whatever we like. And so we try to do this on a regular basis. You've got a couple of examples of some of the cards that we have mailed or delivered out. And we are encouraging people to contact us to have Bible studies, basically. We also try to do a lot of door knocking. Again, we go from house to house, knocking on people's doors, trying to develop their interest in spiritual things, encouraging them to have their spiritual questions answered from the Bible. A lot of people don't like door knocking, but I'm standing before you today as a result of door knocking. Some person bothered to walk up my grandparents' door and invited them to study the Bible, and I'll be eternally thankful for those who did that. And so I probably wouldn't be a Christian today if it wasn't for someone door knocking. And so we try to do this on a fairly regular basis. We also try to do community benevolence works. And so the example on the screen is where our young ones wrapped up socks and put them together and gave them to a local cancer hospital in New Zealand. And the patients really enjoyed this little small comfort, just made things a bit easier for them. And we were able to get our name on the socks and encourage them that way. Another thing that we've done in the last 2 years is a free clothing giveaway. And so we just get a whole bunch of clothing, we open up our church building doors, people can just walk through the church building, they can grab a sack or two of clothes. We have cups of tea and coffee and hot chocolate cakes and cookies. We're freely available. And so people can just come through our building, see that we're not a bunch of crazy people, it's not a weird, kooky thing. We're just regular people in a regular building that do religious things. And it gives us an opportunity to be able to speak to people and to talk with them. And you know, you can see how happy they are getting all of these clothes that they can get for free. And it's just a good service that we have. There is a lady who is currently studying the Bible with us who came as a result of this community outreach. We also have the occasional seminar where we would, predominantly it's more of a Christian evidence kind of seminar, and we will invite and advertise and try to bring the members of the Palmerston North City to come into our buildings to hear these seminars. If you can ever get Mike Hoots to come along, he's a guy who works for NASA. He's a real smart cookie. He knows his Christian evidences. He'd be a good person to bring along and in here. One of the major or intense times of outreach is what we call campaigns. And this is where we will spend anything from generally two weeks, sometimes three, of predominantly door knocking. And we will encourage our local brethren, we will encourage other New Zealand brethren and people from beyond to come and help us out during these 2 week intense outreach efforts, these 2 week campaigns. And so you can see some of the figures there, I won't go through all of them now, but it's a way that we can get a lot of work done, we can meet people in a way that we ordinarily wouldn't meet them. We probably wouldn't meet the people in everyday life that we meet at the door. And so it's a good way to meet people and talk to them face to face, give many households an opportunity to study the Bible. And I would encourage you to kind of think about these words in Acts chapter 16 and verse 9. And so Paul had a vision in the night, and there was a man from Macedonia, and he was standing and he was appealing to Paul, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." Well, I'm going to do a bit of a switcheroo here and change a few things. A certain man from New Zealand was appealing to you, saying, "Come over to New Zealand and help us." I would encourage you, if you have the inclination, you have the time, and you have the ability to come over and help us during the campaign, we would love you to do that. I can guarantee you that you will grow in faith during a campaign. It's challenging, it's tiring, it can be mentally stressful, but you will grow as a Christian. There's nothing like standing on your own 2 feet at some stranger's door trying to convince them to study the Bible with you. You will grow in faith. We will house you, we will feed you, we will train you in how to do it. You just need to come over, and we would love for you to do that. And if that's something you are interested in doing, before you leave today, give me your name, give me your email, and I will send you the information as to when we have our next campaign. We generally have a summer campaign the last week of February, the first week of March. That's kind of near the tail end of our summer. And if that's convenient for you, we would love to have you. Something that we have, a bit of an initiative that we've kind of talked about a bit in Palmerston North is what we might call the 3-2-1 initiative. I think I might have mentioned it. I think there was a bit of a talk that I videoed that you might have seen just recently. The idea here is it's kind of like invite three, set two, convert one. And it kind of, if any of you have played tennis, it kind of sounds like a tennis score. But the idea here is that we're going to invite three people to worship. We want to try to set two Bible studies and convert one person to Christ. And so the first one's kind of a short-term goal. that we're going to invite three people to worship, maybe within a given week or maybe within a given month. We're going to invite three people to worship. Well, then a kind of a medium-term goal is that we want to try to set two Bible studies with your friends, with your family, with your workmates, people who are in sporting clubs or other clubs that you might be a part of. You want to try to set, maybe in a six-month period or maybe in over a year, you're going to try to set two Bible studies. And then the long-term goal, of course, is that you want to convert one person to Christ. Can you imagine how the congregation here at Maryville would grow if every single member of the church was able to convert just one person, throughout a period of time? And so we kind of have this 3-2-1 initiative that we're trying to encourage the brethren to be involved in friendship evangelism. And so again, remember that getting the gospel message out there isn't just down to the preacher, it's not just for the elders or the teachers. Every single person has a role to play in evangelism. And so maybe this 3-2-1 initiative could be something that you could put into play here in Maryville. Whatever evangelistic approach that you use, sorry for the grey background, it was a lot more prettier than it was. We had to, again, one of those glitches that we came up with, but you can still read the text. And so what we gain from 2 Timothy 3, 14 and 15 is that, you know, whatever evangelistic approach that you use, your end goal is to get people into the scriptures, get people into the word. Because see, the Bible is the authority. You and I are not the authority. We're just guiding people to the authority, God's word, to get their spiritual questions answered, that they can find their way to heaven through how the Bible guides them that way. The Bible will give them the wisdom to salvation. So whatever evangelistic approach that you use, the end goal ought to be to get people into the scriptures. I also recommend, once you have developed interest in someone to want to look at the scriptures, that you use a Bible study tool. You don't have to use a tool, but I find it helpful to kind of keep you on track. It's a systematic study that you can teach someone the gospel in a systematic way. I've been able to develop a tool called the Seed for Truth Seekers. I've kind of stolen all the good ideas from other tools that are out there. I've added a few of my own ideas and put this together for my own work. And this has been a good way that I've been able to utilize in teaching people the way home to heaven. Sometimes people need to start at a different place. Sometimes people don't have a belief in God, or they're doubtful. We have a tool that we've developed. Is belief in God reasonable? Maybe that's where we need to start. Maybe they believe in God, but they don't have complete confidence that the Bible is His Word. Well, we've got Christian evidence study tools that we utilize for that purpose, that they can see scientific evidence for God's Word, archaeological evidence for God's Word, medical evidence for God's Word being just that, from God. And there are other study tools that we have as needs arise. Sometimes you're studying with a person, they have a question or they have a struggle in some particular area, and sometimes we just create a tool to help to deal with that particular question. And so we've got studies on original sin, we've got studies on the first day of the week, and other studies like that. If you like the idea or like the look of those and you want to give them a try, again, get with me, give me your name, give me your email, and I can send you any or all of these study sheets that you can utilize, maybe in your own personal outreach work. I've also had I don't know if it's unique these days anymore, but been able to teach people online through online video means, and I've been able to study with six people by this means, and it's a way that I've started offering this as an option. Some people might be a bit nervous coming to the church building or for you to come into their homes, but they might be more comfortable to study online. And it's, you know, it's not quite face-to-face, but if that's the only option that they're willing to do, we're happy to run with that. And so that could be something that if you're not already utilizing that here in Maryville, maybe that's an option that you could consider. Now, of course, the outcome that we're really hoping for is that individuals will come to obedience to the faith, obedience to the gospel. And that's where we're trying to hope that people will make that choice. In New Zealand, this is no easy task. Ethan kind of briefly alluded to that in his introduction. in New Zealand, almost half of the country is just not religious at all, or they don't identify with any religion. You might think, well, 39% identify with Christianity, that's great. Well, that 39%, the majority of them would be members of denominations, and they are very content to stay where they are. And so we commonly hear these kind of phrases, particularly when we're door knocking. Look, I have my own thoughts, I've got my own beliefs, and I don't really want to hear yours. And so that's often what we're up against in New Zealand. There's a lot of disinterest in spiritual things or changing where they are at spiritually. Also in New Zealand, there's a great deal of moral decline that seems to be steadily happening. In recent years, various liberal governments with social agendas have introduced laws that I would say violate Christian principles. There's been a whole host of laws that they have brought in. One of the two recent ones is an extension of the abortion law. It was bad enough as it was, and they've made now the abortion law in New Zealand is one of the most, I don't like using the word, but progressive or extensive in the world. And that really shows very little care for an unborn life. And then they've brought in a law called the End of Life Choice Bill, where people can choose to end their lives if they feel like their quality of life isn't great or they've got a sickness that is causing them pain. Well, they can choose to end their life. And again, the sacredness of life is certainly eroding in New Zealand. The marriage statistics in New Zealand do not make for very good reading. These are just the statistics for 2023. And so more than two out of every five marriages end in divorce in New Zealand. It was 25% plus of marriages in New Zealand are remarriages. And I'm not sure precisely of what the stat would be for this one, but I would dare say that the majority of those remarriages are not marriages that God would approve of. They're not scriptural remarriages. Getting close to 6,000 children under the age of 17 are now have parents who have been granted a divorce. And so in New Zealand, we have a great deal of broken homes. And so, you know, when the home is broken, the country is going to be broken too. And so we see a lot of this throughout, a lot of the sadness going on in New Zealand. There are other concerns that are on the way. It seems like parents have been given more and more responsibility, but less and less rights with their own children. Hate speech and extreme race-based laws are just on the horizon in New Zealand. It's going to make things very difficult. It's quite likely that religious groups are going to be taxed in the very near future, and it's growing increasingly difficult to kind of stand up for what is right. I don't know if you use the term being cancelled. Well, people are being cancelled. You start saying things that the people are offended by or don't like, and they'll cancel you, and you can things can get quite difficult. I hate to be all doom and gloom, but I think things are probably going to get worse before they get better. But you know, even though things are difficult, we still need to be pressed on, right? We still have a job to do. And so we're going to try to take that gospel message, those seven ones and the other aspects of the gospel, and take that to those who are around us. We're going to pick up our shield, we're going to put on our helmet, we're going to take up the sword of the Spirit, and we're going to continue working. And I would continue to ask you to pray for me to have boldness. I don't claim to be the most brave person in the world, so I ask that you'll pray for me for my bravery in trying to continue on in this work. Now, one of the things that I think is really, really important to remember, and I try to emphasize this during these trips when I do these reports, is that when it comes to our work in the church, it's not really the numbers that really count. At the end of the day, we are not held responsible for the number of baptisms and conversions we had. What does God hold us responsible for? He holds us responsible for providing opportunities, for sowing the seed. What comes as a result of that is largely out of our hands, right? God does the work through the Word, and individuals need to have a heart that's going to respond to that. They need to choose to receive the Word and obey the Word. And so while we're doing the work of sowing the seed and providing opportunities, God's going to grant the increase. And it's reliant on people's choice as to whether or not they are going to respond. But our job is to sow the seed. If we are sowing the seed, really the end result and the numbers are not that important. And we have really tried to sow the seed in Palmerston North, and we've tried to do efforts to fulfill that task. And so you would see that as you have done, I'm sure, that over the last 5 years, we've had the doors open for 250 Sundays, 250 midweek classes. We try to broadcast most of our meetings through Facebook video. And so we've got local brethren who are watching it. We've got other New Zealand brethren. We've got non-Christians who are watching it. We've got people in America who watch our services. And so it's served. One of the good things that have come out of COVID is that we were forced to become technologically inclined. And so we were forced to do, but it's had some good things. And we've been able to expose people to what we do who probably would not have been exposed to it by other means. We've been able to have in the last 2 years, two door knocking campaigns. We normally would have more, but kind of COVID stuck its ugly nose in the way, and we weren't able to have as much outreach as we would have liked, but we've had two. We've been able to give about 4,000 homes an opportunity, 4,000 households an opportunity to study the Bible. We've had more than 30 Bible study appointments set during these campaigns. With the letterboxing, it's a bit hard to see there, but we've been able to deliver about 18,500 plus pieces of material throughout the city and throughout different areas close by to us. I've been able to create new Bible study tools. We've had at least six different people study with us online. And again, we've had benevolent outreach events, and we've also had one Christian evidence seminar. And that's not to say, hey, look at us, look at what we're doing, but it's just to show you that we're trying to fulfill the mission, we're trying to do what we can in our outreach and in our teaching in New Zealand. And God has granted the increase. We have, over the last 4 or 5 years, witnessed 11 baptisms, 9 of which continue to be faithful and to follow on. And even though baptisms are few and far between in Palmerston North, and well, in New Zealand as a whole, we get really excited in the few that we have. And so this is good for us to have God granting us the blessing of the increase. This just shows you a slide over the last 10 years, our attendance numbers or congregation numbers in Palmerston North. And you might kind of think, well, that's just kind of, it's a flat line. And I guess it is. One of the things that we do need to realise is that over the years, you know, numbers fluctuate. And just by way of example, over the last 5.5 years, we've had 38 new people come our way, but we've had 35 people go to other places. You know, and if just half of those people had stayed, the congregation would be, you know, pretty close to the 80s. And so, look, we expect comings, we expect goings, we expect fluctuations, so we just got to do the best we can. The good thing, though, is that most of those who have left have been grounded in Palmerston North, and they've gone to other places to utilise their spiritual skills to help out other congregations. So in a way, our work has kind of extended to the other places that they have gone. So that was the external focus. Now I want to spend a little bit of time on the internal focus of our work. And of course, one of the main aspects is to engage in sound teaching. And so we have midweek Bible classes, and I try to have a teaching outline that I give everyone a copy so they can have something to take home with them. We have ladies' classes. Our ladies do a good job of getting together and teaching one another. We try to get visiting speakers to come along every now and then to encourage us. And with our little kids, we've been utilising the Apologetics Press curriculum, which really is a great curriculum. I would encourage you, if you're searching for a new curriculum, that's a really sound, solid one to utilise. We really enjoy it. We have a lot of annual events. Near the end of January, we have a family camp, or you might call it a family retreat. We've also kind of inherited another camp. It's called I Know Oneiro Camp. It's on right beside a beach. We kind of stay in tents, and a lot of young people come, and we spend a weekend together having a lot of fun there in that weekend. The middle picture is something that we've been doing, I think about, was it 8 years, the mountain trip that we take somewhere between about 50 to 70 young people up to Mount Ruapehu, which is about in the middle of the North Island, and we'll take them up for a weekend of fun in the snow. It's one of the few places in New Zealand that really get a lot of snow, and so we enjoy doing that. The top corner there is the ladies' retreat. We call it the Ladies' Challenge, and every year they have a different theme, and sometimes they have 80 to 100 ladies come to Palmerston North to have a good weekend of fellowship and learning, and it's one of the highlights of the year for our ladies. Also, for the last 3 years, we've started doing a Bible Bowl for the younger ones, and we've had three of those, which has been really, really encouraging. We also try to get together as often as we can for fun activities to express the fellowship that we share as Christians, whether it's eating food, whether it's dressing up, whether it's just having fun activities at the church building. We want to try to build our relationships by being together. I think as the church, we need to spend time together. We're a family. We need to be hospitable to one another. The Bible calls for us to be that way. We need to strengthen those bonds of fellowship. And we do that by taking time out to be together, to have fun, to serve together, to just spend time with one another. And we really try to encourage the brethren in Palmerston North to do this with us. We try to nurture our young ones. We've got a lot of young kids running around. Often they make more noise than the rest of us, and it's a good noise to have. I love the noise of the young ones. That tells us that we've got a vibrant congregation going on. And so we really try to nurture these young ones, give them, again, fun activities to do. We give them serving activities to do. One of the real good things that we've started is up here on this side here. We're getting some of the young boys to get up and to, at the end of one of our worship services, once or twice a year, they get up and they'll read the scripture, they'll lead a song, they'll say a prayer, maybe do a brief lesson, and that's just getting them comfortable in front of people, so that when they're older and they need to do it, they're a lot more comfortable to do that. So we want to nurture our young ones. Another really important part of our internal focus is fostering a mature leadership. And this is really one of the really exciting aspects of our work. At the beginning of this year, we had 4 men that were coming along to our leadership men's meetings. Now we have 11. And so we've got a lot of our young men have realized that, hey, we need to take a greater level of responsibility for our faith and our work. And so a lot of our young men are now saying, we need to be part of this. And so they're coming along, they're learning the ropes, they're taking on various roles within the congregation. In fact, while I'm gone, over the next 3 months, they've divided the sermons up between the rest of the men that are in that picture, or most of them. And our son Ethan's going to be doing his first sermon while we're gone. It's kind of bittersweet. We'd like to be there, but the reason why he's doing it is because we're not there, and so we're looking forward to hopefully being able to catch that online. But this is really encouraging for our men. And so we've also started the ladies have their ladies' challenge, and some of the guys thought, well, why can't we have a men's challenge? So we've started a men's challenge. We had our first one last year. We weren't able to do it this year for reasons why we were coming over here, but that's something we're going to try to make an annual event. And sometimes we'll have a men's breakfast on a Saturday. A group of us will get together. We'll have a really healthy breakfast of ham, of bacon and eggs and all the good stuff. And then we'll have a Bible discussion just so we can really, again, get together as men. I think men need to do more things together to really build that male camaraderie. I think it's really, really important that we do that, not only in Palmerston North, but in any congregation. One of the more positive things to come out of this is I think that it's a very realistic realistic for us that we'll have an eldership in place probably by next year. And we're really hoping and praying that we can have that to be the case. We're really working towards that and learning about that and getting men to be qualified for that. So be praying for that. I think that's going to be a real big step for us. This is a picture of the majority of our congregation, and I want to let you know that they are well aware of congregations like yourself that play a part in our work. They know that really your participation in our work makes our work that much easier to do. We probably wouldn't be able to be as effective without the input of congregations like yourself, and they are well aware of congregations like yourself playing a part in our work. And so they send their greetings, they send their love. They're halfway around the world, but I hope you feel their love, that they are thankful for you, and they may not have met you, but they're thankful for you. We've had a bit of a rough 5 years. Many of you might be aware that Phoebe was diagnosed with cancer near the end of 2019, early 2020. She had lymphoma, and that was a challenging time for our family. In just the last couple of years, my mother passed away, Rachel's mother passed away, and this has been challenging times. And I don't kind of say that as kind of, oh, woe is me, because I know that there's probably people in this room that are dealing with cancer. You've either had it, or you've got it, or there's been diagnosis, and it's a struggle for you. I know that you've probably people in this room who have had to experience the loss of a loved one. The reason I show this is to, again, to thank you. You see all the cards on that table? They were sent by brethren, and many of those came from this congregation here in Maryville. And we are so very thankful for the support, the prayers, the help, the gifts that came to us during these tough times. And it was really, really a big shot in the arm. It was good for my kids, it was good for our family to see the church caring for our family. And so thank you for praying and helping our family during the difficult times that we've had in recent years. Let me just close out by saying a personal thank you on behalf of my family. We've only got two-thirds of us are here. The older two kids are back home working. And so, look, we're really thankful for your hospitality. I know it's hard to believe, but we're not really angels, but we're pretty close to it. But we are really thankful that you welcome us here every single time we come. We're thankful that, look, you've been part of what we've been doing in Palmerston North or in New Zealand since I very first started. When I finished up at the East Tennessee School of Preaching, or well, it's SEABS now, Southeastern Bible Institute, when I finished up there, the Maryville congregation was one of the, I think it was almost the second to last congregation that took on the last bit that I needed to be able to go home. And you've been with us for about 30 years, and I'm really, really thankful that you've been with us for all that time. We love you for being part of our work, and I want to thank you for the opportunity for being able to be here and share that with you tonight. I hope it's been encouraging to you. For those of you who didn't understand a single word that I said, there is a display board out in the foyer that you can read. You can read of what I've just said tonight in a bit more detail. But before I close, I don't want to finish this lesson without, you know, we've been talking about the mission and the message. If there's anyone here who hasn't obeyed that message, if you're here and you're a non-Christian, can we show you from the Bible why you ought to become one? Or maybe show you some evidence why God is real, why the Bible is His word. Can we do that? It's reasonable, it's rational, it's logical, and it will be helpful to you. It's spiritually needful. And we'd love to have the opportunity to share that with you, or the members here would love to do that. If you're here and you are a Christian but you've been struggling, look, let the brethren know. You don't have to confess every sin before the brethren that you've ever committed. That's between you and God. But if you could benefit from the prayers of the congregation, man, let us know. Let the brethren here know if they can help you. If you are struggling with a sin, well, now's as good a time to repent as any. And again, you don't necessarily have to come forward and repent your private sins, but look, get on your knees, pray to God, get your life back on track, and get back into serving Him effectively. Again, hey, thank you for the opportunity. I pray that the rest of your evening goes well.